Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by my trusty buddy and co-host, Cody Thompson. How you doing, Cody?
Trusty and buddy. I love that. I'm doing well, yeah, Pat.
That's right. Tracy's out today. So that's once again, flying without a net. And Matt is on the computer, our engineer. He might join in. Who knows? How you doing, Matt? Matt nods. Okay, so today, what's our topic today, Cody?
Well, we actually didn't pick a title, Pat. So I'm texting Matt right now, trying to get the title.
How about
this?
Shoot
at the hip. What is it?
Management is not a reward.
Okay, hit it.
How does that sound?
Hit it. I love it.
Great. Great. So that's what our topic is today.
Matt said good luck to me. So that's better than the title I was about to use. So management is not a reward. That's great.
That's right. And here's what we mean by this. I just got out of a meeting. I was thinking about this week, and I just got out of a meeting where this got driven home. And that is this. You should not take people who are really good in their job and promote them to manager as though that's the reward for being good at that job.
Yep.
And the industry, if you will, in quotes, that I was just dealing with was priests. In the Catholic Church, here's how it works. You become a priest. And so you do priestly duties. You say mass and the sacraments and all that. And then if you've done that for a while and you're good, they make you a pastor, which means you're essentially now running a parish, which is a very different thing. You're still a priest, but now you have management responsibilities, right? Well, some priests are wonderful priests. And the reason they became a priest was because they loved to do that. They didn't have any desire to be a manager or to run a parish. And yet we say, well, this is the next step. And what we end up doing is taking a really good priest and making them a very frustrated pastor. And in the worst case scenario, they get frustrated with the whole thing and they leave. And we do this in a lot of industries. I remember the old adage was, you take your best salesperson and you make them the sales manager. And now you've lost your best salesperson and you have a really crummy sales manager. What a great trade-off. And we have to change the culture so that we don't think that getting named manager is a reward. It's a different calling. It has different skills. And we need to think about it differently. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and Pat, we were just at a client not that long ago where this very thing happened, and then the organization began to grow, and they were stuck in a pickle, sort of. And it's that very thing where sometimes a great individual contributor or a great salesperson or someone who's bringing a skill or talent to the table, that doesn't always translate to management. It's a different skill set, a different role with different responsibilities. But there is this sentiment that, you know, it's the trajectory of your career. Like, how many people have you managed? That's sort of the question that we ask as if that is the direct line for success in a career.
Right. And we feel bad. Like, well, we haven't promoted that person to manager yet. We should probably get on that. And it's like, they might not want that. Many times, the only reason why they want that is because they think that that's an indication of success.
Yep.
And you know, it's so funny to think about what jobs don't do this. You don't take the best writer at a magazine and make them the editor necessarily.
Yeah.
And in the world of sports, you don't take your best player and make them a coach. Not only does that make sense inherently, but the best players aren't necessarily the best coaches. In fact, in more cases than not in sports, the best coaches are players that were pretty good players, but they understood the game more, and the best players are often naturals, and they have a hard time teaching people how to do something.
Yeah, or think about like the context of a school. Like a school teacher, the best school teacher shouldn't get promoted to principal. Like it's the same adage, you've lost now a great teacher and maybe put him or her in a position to not be good at running the school. And it's really sad because you see this happen so often. It's not just that this isn't a problem that's only happening from a organizational standpoint, it's an individual aspirational problem as well. Like we get confused in our aspirations around our career that, hey, I really enjoy my job. I guess I'll take the next step because it's presented to me as a promotion. And maybe we should break that whole model. You know, if work is intended to be fulfilling and you're supposed to use the talents that you're given, then promotion, you know, maybe that's not the right way to think about this. It's like, if we had fulfillment as the goal, then trajectory and promotion are probably not the same thing in that framework.
Right. Fulfillment and optimization of performance.
Right, you know, exactly.
In my first career, I was a management consultant, and it did not match my working genius at all. I did not know that. Of course, we didn't know what working genius was, and what they wanted from me was not what I was good at. In fact, it was what I was worst at. When I finally, after the 2 year stint there, when everybody's kind of decided, okay, what am I going to do next? I sat down with one of the partners, and she said, this job is not a great fit for you, but you would be a really good partner. You're really good at what I do. So we're going to let you go. And we're going to promote those people that are really good at the things you're not. And we're going to make them a manager. Think about it. That just makes no sense.
Well, you know what I think happens in these moments, as you describe that, and I was even thinking of an example that we had in our own organization where it feels like as you're sitting down with someone to acknowledge the contribution they're making, as part of that conversation, you sort of have to increase the responsibility in some way. It feels like this,
right.
This sort of, I don't know, it's like rote into that conversation that, oh, if I acknowledge that you're doing a great job at your current thing, how do we expand that? And I think that what people want, and there's a perfect example that we've had in close to us, is people want the acknowledgement of a job well done. They don't necessarily need that to mean, well, let's promote you to be a manager. In fact, a lot of those conversations could end at, you know, you're really great at this, and there's plenty of room in your career for us to give you more responsibility as it relates to what you're really great at. But I think it would be a bad thing to actually put you in a position where you're doing less of the thing that you're great at that you really love and more people management. And we've had that conversation. As long as you're acknowledging the thing that they're wonderful at, that's the appreciation they need. They don't need the promotion and title to make it to ratify all of that. You know what I mean?
Exactly. In fact, that makes so much sense. It's so counterintuitive to the way things work in the world. And a big part of this, Cody, I think, is money. Because we think that you get promoted to manager and you should make more money. Frankly, what we should say is we're going to promote you to manager. You're going to like this job because you're really good at managing, but it might not mean that over the course of your career, you're going to make more money. Because, you know, it's like the best waiter at a nice restaurant, it's very, very possible they should make up more money than the manager of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Because waiters, like if they're doing a great job, that's why people come back, they get tipped. If a manager said the only way, if a waiter said the only way I can make more money is to become a manager, now we're giving people an incentive to do things they don't necessarily like to do.
Totally.
And it's funny, the best football player often makes more than their coach. Now, part of that doesn't make sense because I think a coach has a huge impact on a team, but the market for wide receivers or left tackles or cornerbacks in the NFL, my apologies to those who don't follow football, is so scarce that that's just what that will pay.
Mm-hmm.
But if we changed that and made the coach the highest paid, every player would be trying to be getting out of play and they'd want to be a coach, even though they're not good at it. It would just make no sense.
Totally. Well, and I think it's worth talking about what makes this so dangerous and such a bad idea to buy into, which is, I think about the client that we were serving the other day, is there is a guy who was incredible at ideation, marketing, all of this stuff that he did really, really well to be able to-
in a small-ish company.
Right. To learn that, to earn favor and created some great revenue streams and all these things and kind of figured out how to crack the code in the marketing part of this business. And so they made him the head of their marketing department. And what was interesting is it's far harder and more dangerous and more detrimental now that they've grown and realized, oh no, that person was really good at the technical, you know, the cracking the code side of the job, not as well fitted for the people side. They're wrestling and with this decision of like, how do we extricate ourselves from this bad situation that we're in? Because it's far more demeaning and dangerous to then have to go to that person and say, oh boy, we promoted you and now we're going to have to walk that back because we don't think you're really great at the people side of this thing. And all they could have done is find more ways for him to use the thing that he was great at. And instead they find themselves in a really tough position.
I totally agree. And the thing is, what has to happen now in an organization like that is they have to have a very real conversation. Because the bad news is, this shit isn't bad news, they've been super successful and now they're 3 times, 4 times larger than they were before. And now they're faced with the prospect of letting this guy be in over his head, mm-hmm. or losing him because we're going to have to tell him he's failing. Well, he's not failing. He's doing great at marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just for whatever reason, he's now in a position and being asked to do things that he was never meant to do. So you have to have a hard conversation and say, we are going to take you out of this role because it's not the role we put you into. And that is not a demotion. In fact, it's a promotion in that we're going to ask you to do the things you love.
Yep.
And there's still a chance that he'll see that as a demotion.
And I love what you said, because the other side of that is a limitation for the business. That's it. So you have to choose between the lesser of two evils in that sense, which is like either this is the ceiling for us because we made an error and we didn't see the people side of this thing in advance. So we're either limiting the potential of our business or having to have a really difficult conversation interpersonally that might end up meaning that we lose this person because we made a bad decision a while ago.
And you should never be in a position to make that trade-off. And what they have to do is appeal to this guy and possibly even pay him more. That might be what they need to do, is say, we're going to give you a raise to take you out of management so that you continue to do the most important thing we need you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably should be celebrating him taking over a new role that's not in management and making it what it is, which is a reward for being great at something he was great at.
You know, this is something, and I don't want to sound like an old man on a porch, but I talk to you about this all the time, and we've hit on it on a podcast or two. I actually think that titles often are doing a disservice to our organizations, because really, if let's say his business card is blank and it doesn't say CMO, yep. or it doesn't say manager, it doesn't say, you know, chief whatever officer, then you can go into that room and have a far better conversation and be like, you know what you're really great at? This thing. And it doesn't matter what the name of it is, but if you know what that person is great at, it really, like, I think part of the issue with that is, oh, I have to go home and tell my wife or my parents or my, you know,
husband
or kids, oh, I got a demotion. And because in title, maybe that changed, but in function, you actually could give that person more breadth of responsibility and more joy and fulfillment in what they're doing by just removing the people side of that conversation. And instead, these titles sort of shackle us to, oh, well, if the title on an org chart doesn't move up, then I guess I don't want that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's true, but what you just said was kind of disappointing to me, Cody, because you said you're going to sound like a man on the porch. And you not once said, kids today, you know, these kids today, because you kind of have to say that. But
right.
But I think that one of the things that makes this such a problem is that we're devaluing the skill of being a manager too.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we should be saying, that's just not your charism. That's just not your gift. But that doesn't mean you're less valuable.
Totally.
It just means that's a different role. But we've devalued what management is because we don't even treat it like a skill set. We treat it like just a next step on the rung of the ladder. And at the same time, we've made people feel like failures if they're not good at that thing, even though they're world-class at doing the most important thing they need to do.
Totally. I love the idea of, like, if you lived in a world or an organization where that was possible, where it doesn't necessarily mean that we value management or people management as the highest form of what you can do. Now, good leaders in good management roles should be paid really well for what they do because that is their skill set. But it's the same thing for individual contributors who are doing a really wonderful job at the thing that they're gifted at. And if we could break the mentality that these things are somehow in a linear progression of a career, it would serve our people better, it would serve our organizations well, and we'd find ourselves in fewer and fewer of these situations where we're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you've been saying something for a long time now, and that is that job descriptions should become obsolete once we understand people's gifts and what they're good at, and we should be putting them in roles that meet their gifts, not trying to fit a square peg in a round hole based on a job description.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, and I don't know what, I'm just thinking about this out loud, is we talk about the chief marketing officer, the CMO, for instance, in an organization. Does that have to be the person who manages the marketing department? Or could the CMO just be like a brilliant marketing strategist and have a general manager that works for them that runs the department? Should the CTO be the person who's really good at managing technical people, or should they be a brilliant mind around technology?
Yeah. This is where I think there's like a thread through all of our podcasts, through many of your books, that is sort of this unique, like if you were to try to piece it all together, there's a reason we talk about organizational health and minimal politics and minimal confusion and high morale and productivity and what that means, and including what you just said is like finding out what people are good at. So there's like that layer. And then we talk about, boy, sometimes it's easier to be a smaller organization that's a little more nimble, that we don't necessarily care about titles. There's all these sort of layers that lend itself to that. I know that you and I sort of have a distaste for talking about our own organization on here, but I think sometimes it's helpful to use that as an example of what is possible. But, you know, I couldn't tell you. In fact, Danny, who manages our website, said to me 2 months ago, hey, I think our roles have changed. It would be really helpful on our website if you could send me everyone's new title. And I was like, oh, I hate that. I don't even know that I could do it in a way that like it feels sincere. I wish we could just put like words up there that didn't really tell people much. Now, that's not serving our constituents well, but I do think that there's a mentality that companies and teams can adopt that's like, we're not saying like, hey, do away with org structures and titles, but there is probably a better, more effective way of thinking about our best resource, which is our people, and utilizing it differently, where titles and job descriptions actually are less effective.
Yeah, and in small companies, it's easier to do that, which is why it should be an advantage to be a small company. You're more nimble, you can do all those things. In a big company, they're like, well, this is how people think about us, so we have to do that. Small companies should not adopt the practices of big companies, because all they're doing is hamstringing themselves. But I want to talk about Dani in our office, because she's amazing at customer service, right? She's cool, and she's fast, and she gets things done, and she thinks outside the box, and she's really comfortable when the stuff hits the fan. She's world-class at that.
Yeah.
And I love her because she'd say, I don't need to manage people. Mm-hmm. I can have people that can help me with this, but I like what I do. And so she's a great example of this. It's like, we want to keep a world-class person in customer service, and we don't want to take her out and make her do something she doesn't want to do just because she thinks the world might see that differently. So when people say, what's my title? I say, well, we'll put on the website whatever helps outsiders figure it out. But if you ever leave here and you need to get another job, we'll pick whatever title works best for that.
Totally.
We'll have a blank business card. We'll print out there, what do you want to be? Pick a title for yourself. Because I want you to do what makes the most sense here. I don't want to fit you into something just because the world sees things differently. So
yeah, and it's a great example. I mean, and this goes back to the very beginning here, which is taking someone like Dani, who is world class at what she does. If we were to take her and extricate her from her day-to-day tasks of everything she does around the website and technology and our customers and all of that, we're losing someone who is incredible at that and putting her in a position where she's probably going to be a little more frustrated by that. And instead, it was really meaningful to sit and say, hey, this is your kingdom. We love that this is your kingdom. You know, we want you to own this for as long as that makes sense and that we can manage it as we grow. And if something changes, great. It was the acknowledgement of the work, the stuff that she's doing well, that actually made that conversation great, instead of needing to say, oh boy, you're doing such a great job, I need to find the next thing for you, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Otherwise, we'd be saying, congratulations, I'm about to ruin your life.
Yeah.
You're getting a promotion. You're not going to do what you're great at and that you love. Hey, we have a new segment, or not a segment, but a little thing we're going to do, where we got a great email the other day from a listener. I mean, we love real-time feedback. So here's how it works. This guy, Brandon, we love this. Here's the opening paragraph. He said, I wanted to share the immediate impact of this episode today. So this was our episode called Rehire Your People. So it was from a few weeks ago. He said, I turned it on during my early morning drive to work, curious about the discussion that would be in it. I was coming into work earlier than normal because that was the day, or he said, today is the day we welcome new hires and interns into our firm. It was my assignment to welcome them that day into the firm. So Long story short, he listens to the episode where we're talking about the way we onboard people and we should be, it's about culture and it's about stories. And so here's what he said. He goes, "So this morning when I got to work after listening to the podcast, I welcomed our new staff. I scrapped a very cold welcome to the firm, a welcome to the firm speech, and instead told two culture stories from my own experience to show what our firm really embodied during my career. And I hoped it would be part of their memories of their onboarding experience." Mm. He said, "I'm committed to share stories for our company values, not only over during this 2-week onboarding period, but also to my entire team as I meet with them individually this month as we get ready for the kickoff." So I love the fact that he literally put this on and 20 minutes later, he changed the way he was going to do onboarding and he realized he's going to start managing his own staff differently. And we love to hear from listeners who find practical applications of our podcast.
Yeah. And Pat, this is such a great reminder. You and I talk about this, but it's worth saying on here, which is we so appreciate that people tune into this podcast that actually want to embrace some of what we're talking about or feel like they're getting a nugget or two from each of these episodes. I mean, we don't take that lightly. We sometimes sit and think like, hey, you know, we have X amount of listeners. What soccer stadium does that, like we want to make sure that we're being responsible to the ear that you're lending us. So just know that we love those stories because it means a lot to us. It definitely drives our desire to make these good. So,
and you know, thank you, Cody, guys. When we started the firm and up until this day, we always said everything we do needs to be practical, relevant, and fast.
Yep.
If it's not something you can use, it's not as valuable. If it's not relevant to the real world and to your environment, it doesn't help. And if it's not fast, you're probably not going to listen to it or read it, which is why we're going to end this podcast right now. So thanks, Perfect. Everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.